When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials, you got a guy with some qualifications, and now there's just, when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to Dan Wiederer, and he joins us. All our guests do. Brought to you by Aturo. Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Dan, we've been through years like this. Something's got to give. Maybe this is the week. Maybe finally this is the week.
They're almost all like this, Mully, and a lot of times it isn't the week. And so what happens here if the Bears can't come up with an answer Sunday and then they've got to turn around on a short week and go and play the best team in football in their place? Here we are again. Hi, guys. Good morning.
Hey, buddy.
Morning, yeah. Dan. Yeah, so it's another difficult week of preparation, maybe another week of dysfunction. You just don't know what to expect at Halas Hall, but it does seem all too familiar. What do you think was, in terms of the offense, the biggest thing for and reason for encouragement? I know it was only 19 points, but when you were where the Bears offense was, 19 points feels like it's worthy of a celebration.
No question, right? Like, and it's a low bar to clear, but to see them put together four scoring drives after the way the offense looked against both the Patriots and the Cardinals, it felt better. You saw a quarterback who was calmer, who was more comfortable. I think Caleb really benefited, number one, from having both offensive tackles back. He just gives you a little bit more stability when you take the snap and you're able to stand back there and scan a little bit. I also thought Thomas Brown did a great job with, I called it yesterday, sensible simplicity. It was just, a lot of short stuff, you know, things that didn't require your quarterback to do a whole lot, a low degree of difficulty on a lot of completions, and they got rolling. Their ability to kind of mix in both running backs too, I think, was significant because you got two different types there with Roshan and DeAndre Swift, and they were able to create balance that we hadn't seen a lot of this season. So again, one game, very small sample size, a lot more to prove in these next two games, but certainly a step in the right direction given where they were.
Well, it's interesting because I agree with what you're saying. It was good to see him get the ball out as fast as he got the ball out. It was good to see them convert on third downs, and a lot of that was, I think he ran for four of them. Uh-huh. I just wonder, Dan, now you're going against a 3-4 defense that's going to be hiding a lot of different looks. Now it's almost like you got to be even faster. You're going to be seeing things that, yep, maybe you haven't seen before, but you're going to have to keep up the pace of what you're doing in terms of getting the ball out in less than 2.5 seconds.
So when the Bears went to Arizona, I was very concerned about how a rookie quarterback with limited experience in this league was going to face that defense, which obviously uses Buda Baker as their chess piece and causes some mental strain pre-snap on you, some mental strain post-snap on you. I would multiply that by two against this Vikings defense, because Brian Flores is going to do so many different things that Caleb has never really had to adjust to at this speed at the NFL level, right? Like, you're going to have seven guys at the line of scrimmage. Sometimes they're going to bring five and you're not going to know where the extra guy is coming from. Sometimes they're going to drop eight and you're going to be like, oh God, I thought I was going to face pressure here. And now they're back in coverage. The way that the Vikings use things within their defense, the versatility they have with the players they have, is really, really challenging. And it's going to be like Caleb's going to have to do a Sudoku puzzle right as he takes the snap on every single play that's designed for a pass. So this is going to be a massive challenge. Andrew Van Ginkel leads the Vikings in sacks, playing at a high level. He has two pick sixes as well. You've got a defense, guys, right now that's number one against the run. They lead the league in interceptions. They're top five in scoring. They're top five in sacks. So good luck. You know, this is a totally different challenge and one that I think is going to create a lot of mental strain on Caleb.
So unfortunately, Dan, you have done this kind of thing before. Cover a team and a coach that seems to be nearing his final days or final games, and you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself.
Kiss of death,
buddy. You might be, actually. You arrive in 2013, and then, look, all hell breaks loose. But I don't want to – that's a different show, or that's a podcast. So I wonder, when you hear things that start to sound familiar, what are you looking for? Does a team – can a team rally around a cause? Is this a situation where you can see players supporting Matt Eberflus or not supporting him by what they aren't saying? How are you approaching this in that context about maybe what could be the final weeks of the Matt Eberflus tenure?
First of all, I want you guys to know that during my time covering the Vikings, the guys on the beat called me the Vikings Whisperer because things were so calm and so successful during my time there. The last season that I covered the Vikings, Adrian Peterson won an MVP award and the Vikings went to the playoffs. So I'm going to push back adamantly that I'm the Kiss of Death, although we could rename the podcast Kiss of Death if that's what we need to do.
Might have to.
Because they're never taking the North.
To your other question, David, it gets a little bit painful when you're in late November and December in these seasons that you know are cooked. This one feels like it's cooked. The Bears can do something in these next two games by winning at least one, maybe two of them. That's a huge challenge. And so all of a sudden you're staring down the barrel of a team that went into the bye week 4-2 and may struggle to get to seven wins. As we talked about last week, like there's not a lot of gimme victories left on your schedule. For the guys that are here for the long term, the playmakers that are going to be part of this nucleus for years to come, they've got to stay completely immersed in building the program, understanding that it's probably going to be in other people's hands, come February 1st, but you still have to be sort of steadfast and disciplined in the way you approach every day to make sure that you're not wasting any time and catching up. Because guys, guess what? You're in a division here that isn't going to slow down anytime soon. And maybe the most depressing thing about this whole thing, and I tweeted a little bit about it last night, is Matt Eberflus is the worst coach in the NFC North by two country miles, right? When you look at Campbell and LaFleur and Kevin O'Connell, who was hired 20 days after Matt and somehow has twice as many wins as he does after 44 games.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, look, I'm trying to keep a separation of church and state, but we talked about it earlier in terms of Joe Douglas getting fired. You know, you have the same record the coach has. Now, in this case, both guys came in at the same point. I understand what a rebuild is. I understand where things have gone wrong, but goodness gracious, you know, they're trying out five safeties yesterday. That really makes your stomach sink because we know Jaquan Brisker's not coming back anytime soon, and now Elijah Hicks, who was pretty good as a replacement, now you're looking at a third safety maybe, depending on what the injury report looks like this week. So, I mean, who wears that? We talk about the offensive line and everyone gets to that all the time. We talked about the defensive line yesterday. We haven't talked a lot about that, but they barely were breathing heavy on the quarterback last week. And that was a game where you were hoping that Montez Sweat could do a Superman routine. He seems pretty banged up. Billings is out. They're not getting the lift they once had from some of these other guys. I don't know how to feel about a Zach Pickens. Is he still hurt? I don't know if Dexter has got some issues. What's happening? It feels like you're not getting the delivery on either side of the line of scrimmage.
100%, right? And so, like, you had a game last week where, I'm watching it back and I'm saying, when's the last time we felt Tremaine Edmonds in a football game, right? Like, this is a guy you invested a lot of money into to be an impact playmaker, and it's been a while since he's made an impact. Montez Sweat has been hurt and disappointing. The Bears are bottom half of the league in sacks. Your takeaway faucet is still on, but it's not flowing the way it once was. And you get vibes. It's like 2019 Cubs vibes with Craig Kimbrell, where you've got a defense that's supposed to be your closer, but the production doesn't match the reputation.
Cup
right?
reference like, in a faucet metaphor. Wow. Yeah, wow. You're rolling today, Dan.
But I mean, like that defense had the football game in their hands the other day, right? Yes. There's 4.5 minutes left and you're in there to close, and then your best player falls down. And I know Jalen said on these airwaves just a few days ago that it was going to be an interception if it wasn't a 60-yard catch. Well, it wasn't. It was a 60-yard catch, and I disagree with him vehemently that he was going to be able to pick that pass off. He fell down. The Packers got 60. They scored a game-winning touchdown, and you've got to wear that. You've got to own that, and you put that with a game that they couldn't close earlier in the year. You put them with games they couldn't close last year against the Broncos, the Lions, the Browns, and you say, well, wait a minute. Like, this defense is supposed to be the unit that finishes things. You know, sure, they did it in week 1 against the Titans, but you're supposed to, if you want to be elite, if you want to be top five, we heard top five, top five, top five all through April, May, and June, then be top five and finish football games and don't leave it up to a kicker at the end to have to get a higher trajectory on a 46-yard field goal.
Those are great points. That's tremendous insight. Okay, so let's look at Sunday's game. I look at the Vikings coming in with Brian Flores. They're going to throw everything at Caleb Williams. That's going to be fascinating. Game inside the game. I also look at Brian Flores and I wonder this. Is he going to be a top head coaching candidate at the end of the season if the Vikings defense continues on this path? And has he outlived or outgrown the connection to his last stop and the reasons maybe he hasn't been hired as a head coach again? Because when you remove some of those things, and we're talking about, we have a team that might be looking for head coach, and we've got a team that might have one of the top candidates available in the hiring season. Brian Flores was pretty good at Miami. Do you think he could emerge as a guy who becomes the source of a lot of conversation in Chicago in a couple months?
Wow.
There's two different questions there for me. One is, will Brian Flores be a guy whose name is hot on the head coaching candidate circle? 100%. When we're talking about Chicago, we need somebody to oversee the development of the quarterback here, don't we, guys? Like, I mean, like, are we gonna make that mistake twice and not be able to figure out what that's gonna look like?
You need a head coach. You need a leader.
Yeah, but if they make a change, I agree with you 100%, Dan. If they make a change at the end of the year, they want to bring in someone who can be with Caleb Williams not for a year, not
for 10.
Exactly. They want to bring in someone who can bring an offense and be there and be a quarterback whisperer, and then you can worry about your defense and bring people in, and hopefully someone stays. But, you know, you can't – we're talking about his third coordinator starting next year. It better be someone who's going to be here more than a year.
And David, I'll just ask you to shift your vision like 4 feet to the left. Look at Kevin O'Connell. Look what Kevin O'Connell has done in the 3 seasons that he's been there, because he is so good at connecting with his quarterbacks. Yes, he did it with Kirk Cousins, but he's had to win games with Josh Dobbs. He's had to put Nick Mullins out on the field at times. He's resurrected Sam Darnold here within this season to the point where people are going, wait a second, Sam Darnold is the starting quarterback of an 8-2 football team? And so you look at all of the things that Kevin O'Connell has done, and you say, man, it would have been nice if we had a shot at him. Oh, wait, right? Like, these are the types of questions that you have to ask yourself, and you have to kind of examine what is creating that success up there. Because I don't think any of us would sit here and say that the Vikings roster over the last 3 seasons has been head and shoulders above where the Bears. And yes, the Bears tore it down in 2022, but Kevin O'Connell's got 28 wins. Matt Eberflus has got 14. There's something in the coaching style and the way that he has brought out results of his football team that is worth examining. And then you try to find yourself one of those guys, because it's not like these guys, as Brad tells you with offensive linemen, they don't grow on trees, and you just better select right. And the Bears have a long documented history of selecting wrong.
And look at his record in one score games. Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah.
Oh, yep.
It's the opposite of what Matt Eberflus is.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about that, and I don't want to keep harping on the end of the game, Dan, but it's worthy of a question, which is, at the end of the game, Caleb Williams leads the Bears to I think they got, after the two sacks, it gets to 3rd and 18 or 3rd and 19. He completes a pass to Rome Odunze. And then on fourth down, he completes a fourth and two, whatever it was, to Keenan Allen. And, you know, they run a running play, but it was almost like Eberflus was in such shock that they were in field goal range that he just wanted it to stop and kick the field goal. It's like he didn't. After what had happened to get there and the kind of miraculous finish that you needed to get into range, it was almost like he was satisfied with where he was on the field. This guy can kick a 40. Let's go.
Never
let's
expected go. This.
Exactly. And then they went back and looked at the Allen play, which was there was no need to, but they did. So
maybe
that sequencing of plays was as much the reason he wanted to get to the field goal as sitting back and thinking through, well, wait a minute, the guy's 70 of 70 from 40.
Yeah, inside and, 40, yeah.
Maybe we should try to improve this spot. Do you see what I'm saying? It was almost
100%.
Like,
but that's who Matt is, right? And,
yes.
And so Keenan Allen made that catch with 46 seconds to play. You've got time to run two more plays if you want. You've got a timeout in your bag. As you said, they reviewed the play, and then the Packers took timeout after the review to preserve time. So you had a lot of clubs in your bag, and you just chose the most conservative one. I would tell you to go back to last year in Detroit when they blew that game at Ford Field, and they got inside the red zone at one point, and then he just – kind of turtled and didn't try to score a touchdown and settled for the field goal. And then you blew a 12-point lead in the final minutes. And it was, you know, there's two parts to that. It's number one, you're leaning on your unit, your defense that you think is going to close football games. Well, guess what? As we documented just a few minutes ago, they're not doing it consistently enough. And the other part is you're just kind of wired conservatively by nature, which is what a lot of defensive coaches are. They would rather take the ball out of their quarterback's hands and put it in their defense's lap and say, win us this football game. When it doesn't work out, you've got to answer to that. And so it wasn't out of character for Matt Eberflus to do what he did. It was just wrong, and it cost him a football game.
Yeah.
There's been too many times over the last 3 years that those types of decisions have cost them football games. And it's why, as David said at the outset, that the clock is ticking, the sand in the hourglass is rapidly draining up there.
So Dan, you've asked all the right questions, and you were there on Sunday. I just curious, clear this up, because some people keeps coming up, and I don't think it's accurate. Cairo Santos wanted the ball on the left hash because of the way the wind was blowing, and he had comments post-game that suggested that, because I keep hearing that the ball was on the wrong hash and he likes it on the right hash, and maybe that's the way he typically does. But didn't he say that he, because of the wind, wanted it where it was?
He didn't say that specifically, and it is on my list today to follow up on, because this is – harkens back to, we're always going back in history, right?
And he referenced the wind, though. Left to
he
right
did.
Wind.
He said left hash, left to right wind, and felt like he hit a solid ball, and the kick still missed. But I don't know if that was the preference. We're going to have to find out a little bit. Remember, we may not get fully honest answers, but you guys remember 2019 after the Chargers game when Eddie Pinheiro let us know that the ball was not on the proper hash mark for his preference, and he missed a kick by 5 inches to the left, and they lost a football game, and it was a whole to-do about whether the Bears are on top of their details when it matters most. What we've seen with this football team is they're not on their details when it matters most. It happened with the Hail Mary. It happened with the protection on the field goal. It happens so often that we're always here on Wednesday morning, having these conversations instead of, boy, how great was it that your rookie quarterback for the second time in 4 weeks stepped up and led your team on a fourth quarter drive that, you know, created the glory that everybody's been seeking in this city for a while. So this is our existence, guys. I'm sorry that we have to kind of keep doing it, but you guys are used to it more than I am.
I got to tell you though, Dan, I know it's just a matter of fact. Yeah. The guy led them to two fourth quarter comebacks and they lost both games.
Right.
That's as damning a quarterback development issue as there is out there. You can't throw away his achievements, which build his confidence, which make
his resume.
The national storyline would be a lot different about
him
if they had won those games, which frankly he had won at the end of the game.
And you don't think those things matter. Those things matter. A 23-year-old kid gets up in the morning and turns on his TV and sees the entire world talking about how heroic he was rather than your organization that you play for is an absolute mess. It's a different psychologically. Now, Caleb's really strong, and he's done a great job over the last 6 months of kind of weathering a lot of things in this organization. But those things do matter. That you can't squander those. And as you say, Mully, this is a guy that stepped up and showed that he has that juice, and the game on the line line moments. And I will say this, significant in a despondent locker room on Sunday and again on Monday afternoon at Halas Hall is the belief that the Bears players took out of that, the fact that their quarterback at this stage of his rookie season has done it twice now, where he said, look, like, I don't care what's happened up to this point. The game is our hands, and I'm going to go down and lead us to something really fun. And he backed it up. And so there is belief that swelling inside that locker room and what Caleb can do on a more regular basis than that, just got to get him in more competent hands sooner rather than later, so that you know, next year it's a win in a playoff chase instead of a loss and a uh-oh, here we go, we're headed for reboot again.
Great stuff, Dan. Thank you, buddy.
Great stuff.
Appreciate
Thanks,
your
Dan.
Time.
Always good talking to you guys. See you later.
That is Dan Wiederer from the Tribune. Great stuff. Really, yeah, really. You know, a lot of real gems in there, and we'll talk about it. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah, we had to be firmer inside for sure. And again, we'll turn the play in. You know, because obviously they were on our long snapper. You know, so we'll turn it in and see what the league says from there. But again, we just got to be firmer in the execution.
What did you see with the lockdown specifically? Like,
yeah, we just saw making direct contact with them right away, and we'll turn that in as well.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the head coach of the Bears, Matt Eberflus.
Yep.
Talking about the loss to the Green Bay Cheaters.
The Green Bay Cheaters, yeah, exactly. So we want to move on from this, but I think that before we do, it's important to put it in the entire context and hear from every side. And now that Matt Eberflus talked about, that was on Monday,
yeah,
that he sent the play to the league, getting the perspective of somebody who is a rules expert, Mike Pereira, with his background is important. And then we can move on. But Mike Pereira was our guest on the Big Pro Football Show on Tuesday night on the Chicago Sports Network. Ruthie Polinsky and Clay Harbor and I interviewed Mike Pereira, and he was asked about what Matt Eberflus just alluded to, the play that they sent to the league.
Well, he's turning in the right thing, and I think the most interesting thing is the clubs got sent a video about just a couple of weeks ago talking about protection of the center, and they specifically showed a play where the player started from the A-gap, crossed in front of, and made contact with the center before he was able to get up and protect himself. And they said he is defenseless. So what does that mean? That means any contact with the crown of the helmet, which you didn't have, but any contact of the head or neck area with any part of the body, which you did have. And that's what they pointed out, that knee, for example, to the helmet is a foul for a hit on a defenseless player. And I think he's got a good case here. Mm-hmm. And I did talk to the league. They're looking at it, and they're looking at the force element. All the other elements were there, and if they conclude that there was force, then, I mean, they're going to agree with Matt. That's not going to make anybody happy because you can't go back. But there's always teams that are not very happy at the end of the day or the end of the Sundays.
Again, fair whack to everyone. Yeah, you got to look at it. Look, we saw this. Let's send it to the league. You know, hey, the officials are going to get a reprimand. They'll get a little note, and maybe they won't get a playoff assignment. Maybe we can hit them in the pocketbook. I mean, again, the Bears lost the game because there was no call made on the play. And the league is never going to come back and say, you know, those rat sons of guns in Green Bay. We're taking away your victory.
I'm not disagreeing with any of that. And I don't think that's the focus of why right. this is important. I think, to me, it's interesting that when Matt Eberflus talks about sending a play into the league and complaining about it, there should have been a penalty called, I think this just says it's not sour grapes. There's something legitimate there.
And I feel that that's true, David. But I also feel, and I mean this sincerely, like your takeaway shouldn't be, well, I hope they call this. Hey, you know, we got ripped off on a play the last time we did this. Make sure you're watching this because we don't want that to happen again. Whatever he's going to do before the game. I hope his takeaway isn't, I made the right decision. The league messed up. Because you know what? Run another play.
Well, that's a fair
– run another play.
That's
learn
a fair opinion.
From what happened.
That's a fair opinion.
And say, I wasn't aggressive enough.
Both things can be
I'm
true.
I'm going to get as close as humanly possible.
I think both things are true.
Both things can be
I
true.
I think the fact that Matt Eberflus blew right. up by not giving his team the yes. best situation to thrive and to win the game, that's what every coach should do, and he didn't.
Yes.
And when he didn't, they were stuck with the field goal option, and – when they botched the field goal and got it blocked, it was partially because the Packers committed a penalty.
Okay, but I'm not going to – I don't want his takeaway to be, I was right and I'll do it again. I want his takeaway to be, I got to get closer and I'll do it. I'll make sure I'm as close as humanly possible. If I've got time to run another play, I'm not going to say, well, what about a holding penalty?
Fair enough.
What about an offside?
I think the ultimate takeaway is going to be they're going to be taking him away.
Yeah, I agree.
Or leading him to the parking lot.
And on the way out, as he's wrapping up his house and some guy is tearing up the E, he's going to be able to say, but the Packer game wasn't my fault. Talk to Pereira. I mean, it's just, it's like, it doesn't.
Leave Pereira out of it.
I love Pereira.
He's a really good guy.
I think he's a great
guest. He's really good. He's a good guest.
And we can't ever get him because he's on the West Coast.
It's way early.
It would be 5:30. Give him a call, Dustin. Let's get him on.
Come on, Dustin.
No, I just.
You're right, Molly.
I think there's a lesson in this, which is stay aggressive. Be aggressive, B-E aggressive. I can do a cheer for you, David.
B-E-A-G-G-R-E-S-S-I-V-E. That one?
That's a good one,
okay,
too.
Okay, that's a good one.
That's good spelling.
So it's interesting that
Dustin,
today,
don't do that cheer.
In the Sun-Times, Mark Potash points out an example. Boy, he's on the phone. Mark Potash, I think, who's as good of a historian as exists on the beat, and recent and past history. But recent history, he points out, Dan Campbell had a similar situation, and he did the same type of thing.
Yes.
With the Detroit Lions, and it worked. We also could point to Sunday night. Jim Harbaugh took the opposite, and it worked. I think it's
who?
Just – I know.
I'm just
I
saying.
I said the H word.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know I get triggered by that, too.
I think it's hard not to.
It's just all bad – luck, bad timing, things, bad culture. The Bears have a culture where they find ways to lose.
What was the statistic you gave us yesterday that they've lost six games while leading? They've lost six games where they had a 90-something percent
yes.
chance of winning.
Yes.
And the odds of losing all six of them are like
one in 68 million, I believe.
One in 68 million. I'm sorry. There's something that statistic, if you somehow.
I think it's more than bad luck.
No, I think it's got like a dark cloud over your head and it's raining on you permanently.
You maybe have a dark cloud, but you are driving your car and you're putting yourself right under that dark cloud every single time. You're making it more likely that you are going to get rained on and the downpour of desperation is going to come into your life.
It's like you're in a golf cart and you're holding up your putter and you're bound to get hit by lightning from the dark cloud over your own head.
All those things, yes.
One in 68 million?
I don't even know. Is that a fake stat?
Seriously.
DraftKings put that out responsibly. I have not done the math. We are not mathematicians. But it's got to be fake.
What would that formula look like,
I don't
David?
Know,
I have to do the math. It would take me pretty much the rest of my lifetime to do the math on that.
It's a stunning number, though. But it just all underscores how bad the Bears have been the last 3 years in one-score games and when they have leads.
Let me quickly get that math problem done. Hold on.
Where's the back of my envelope?
Raise the four.
Here it is for the Bears repeating. The Bears had a 71.3% chance to win Sunday's game against the Packers, and they lost. Over the last three seasons, they have blown five leads with a 90% or higher chance of winning. The odds of losing all six of those games are 1 in 68 million.
I mean, okay. One of those games had to be the Hail Mary, whatever.
It was.
Okay.
It was.
The, you know, Hail Mary full of disgrace, as we called it. So that's one. So
now you're blasphemous.
Two of the. I worry about that. I
Ten our fathers for that one,
you
young
know,
man.
You know that I feel the guilt.
I'm sorry.
But two of the last four games you've lost in that fashion. What are the odds of that, you reckon? I mean, I don't know that it's 68 million, but I would say the odds have got to be pretty high that you can't lose two games like that in a month period.
And keep your job.
Well,
unfortunately, that is not what we come here to do.
I don't know that he's keeping his job.
We don't come here. Right. We're not coach killers. We don't want to do that. And you do feel bad every time somebody loses a job. We also know how the NFL works. And that's why I asked Dan Weider the question that I asked him. And I thought your reaction was very interesting. His too. Brian Flores is coming to town on Sunday.
Right.
And he has a defense that is playing at a high level because largely he's pushing the right buttons, Molly. And I think that when you look at objectively at his past with the Miami Dolphins, I think he was the first head coach in back-to-back winning seasons in a long time there. He's a guy who's qualified to be a head coach in the NFL.
Are you going to interview Tua if you decide to bring him in?
Well,
I there's not a shadow of a doubt he's a qualified NFL
did you say no?
head coach.
You don't want him in Chicago?
I said,
or on the list?
Here's what I said. I said, if indeed you get rid of your head coach at the end of the year,
mm-hmm.
you owe it to the quarterback, you owe it to the fan base, and you owe it to yourself to hire a guy that can make the quarterback into the player that you dream he can be. And you know, you doesn't matter how great a defensive coordinator is or how great a defensive-minded head coach. I know, you know, it's funny because Belichick, everyone says, well, there's an example of a great defensive guy. He started out as a special teams coordinator, right?
That's
John Harbaugh.
And then he developed
and
a quarterback.
And Mike Ditka. And then he developed a quarterback. But he knew football all the way around. He was in charge of everything. And all the people who worked for him failed after they left him. I'm just saying, the most important thing.
It's a fair point.
Is fixing the quarterback
point.
and not having. He's on his second coordinator. He's in his first year.
But
you're going to give him a third one, and then what happens if that guy does a great job and
Matt
gets
Eberflus.
A job?
No.
No, it has to do only with who's working. The guy you hire. Say you hire Brian Flores. Who's he bringing in as the offense coordinator? And if that guy does a good job, is he staying here? Because Caleb needs a guy that will be there with him, helping him.
Don't disagree with
improving
that.
Improving him.
Don't disagree
for
with that.
10 years.
For the sake of argument, not even argument, for the sake of this conversation, when you look at Thomas Brown and the remaining seven games, if you believe that Caleb Williams can end the season like this, and I'm going upward in
yes,
the trajectory,
yes.
The arc is headed in the right direction.
I believe.
And say they develop a chemistry and a camaraderie that is conducive to improvement.
Now you sound like Bernstein.
You've
seen one game and you want the guy to be the head coach.
No, I don't want. No. Just, let me finish. I'm not right, saying I want right. him to be the head coach.
I'm just
oh
saying.
Oh my God, you just compared me to Dan Bernstein. So.
I said you sounded like
him. Let me finish.
Like
so. Thomas Brown, if he's calling the right plays and pushing the right buttons and getting the most out of Caleb Williams, could you envision him staying with a defensive-minded head coach like Brian Flores? And that almost be conditional. Or that is a situation that you would have. I'm asking because you talked these things through.
No. And that's a fair question, and I apologize for that horrible
I'm never forgetting
comparison.
That.
But didn't Bernstein come in here and say after one game that he thought that the guy should take over the head coach, get rid of Eberflus? I'm just saying, I got to see, like, you definitely got a bump. You definitely got
bump.
What did Dan call it? Simplicity.
Sensible simplicity.
Sensible simplicity. And that's what we
Dan
were talking
Weider.
About.
Yeah, he did a good
we
job
were talking
that.
About this idea of running the football. They got balance in the offense. They got the quarterback out of harm's way, and they did a pretty good job up and down the line. They scored 19 points. I think Caleb Williams is capable of doing the upward trajectory thing for the rest of the year. I don't know that it's because of the coaches around him. And I don't know that I'm interested or if I'm afraid to take a coach away from him at the end of the year. I want the single best guy. I want, you know, the idea, you talked about it yesterday, if Kyle Shanahan were somehow run into trouble.
That was my fantasy,
first of
yes.
all, Kyle Shanahan, if he...
Fantasy football,
let's
indeed.
Just say that something happened and they released him. He would have a job, not the next day, but within like a 4-minute period, whoever could call him. And I think there are teams that would fire the coach to hire him.
They'd do the Joe Madden.
Yes.
They would do the Renteria.
Yes.
They would do that. Yes.
Yes.
They would.
So
Renteria.
If you had a guy like that, if Sean McVay decided he had enough of mm-hmm. living in L.A. and he wanted to come to the Midwest, mm-hmm. you know, you'd hire a guy like that and you'd have him with a quarterback and you'd be laughing the whole
time.
You'd
be laughing. That's not going
to
happen,
but
though.
I know, but I'm just,
unlikely to happen.
I'm not trying to be mean to Thomas Brown, but let's see. Let's now that you know. I mean, this is a really good example. This game, the entire game plan has to shift and change. You've got to come up with a way of having Caleb deal with everything that is different, a 3-4, and where they're coming from, and everything we talked to Dan about. So let's see. And you know, maybe by the end of the year, you feel that way. It's conceivable. But at this point, I mean, I feel like everybody's got one foot in the grave, one foot on a banana.
We'll get to everyone's calls and we'll come back, maybe talk about what you just suggested in terms of limiting your options, because what you just described, you're not going for somebody unless they are an offensive-minded head coaching candidate.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Does the result change anything for you as far as going forward? Would you do the same thing again in a similar situation?
Yeah, I mean, where the conditions were and where we were in the game, I would say, yeah, I would do the same. I mean, would you like to be closer? Yeah, sure. You'd like it to be at the 15-yard line, but it is where it is. And you could have done a bunch of different things there. You could have ran a pass. You could have ran a play, outside play. You could have ran another play that we punched it there, forward for 2 yards, you know, from the 30 to the 28. So, again, if that thing breaks for a couple more yards, it's definitely a positive. But that's where it is.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. That is the voice of Matt Eberflus from Monday when he doubled down on his decision on the penultimate play to let the clock run out.
Yep, and he won't back off that. Doesn't matter if he had a point with Mike Pereira saying that there should have been a penalty called or whatever, but he is going to stick to his guns, and I think it has as much to do with just him trying to stay consistent as anything. But, yeah, not the way that I think a lot of people would have handled it, but that is what you get when you are in the midst of this kind of losing streak, and it's 4 games and counting.
Back to the coaching thing. And again, we don't know that they're going to make a coaching move, and we're not here kind of cheering for anybody to lose their job. It'd be nice if things had gone differently and you didn't feel like the guy was in trouble. It'd be nice if you didn't have a 4-game losing streak on a yearly basis. It'd be good. But the reality is that they are 4-6 now, and their schedule is a lot harder the rest of the way, and we'll see where they wind up. And again, it would help to have a win. It would help to not be like Dallas and go through a 5-game losing streak. God, it's going to be hard for people to keep their jobs. But you asked the question about why I believe they should have an offensive-minded head coach. I want to be careful, because I do believe that you need a leader of men. You need somebody that can come in, that can talk in front of the group, that, you know, I feel as if Shane Waldron never got the fan base behind him because of some of those weird news conferences where he just kind of, I just never felt like he was the man in charge. Now, it's his offense. He's the one who put it together. He installed it. and they are calling plays off of it right now. But I don't feel like he had the personality to be a head coach in the NFL.
I know what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with the assessment of his personality, but I also think had they scored on fourth and goal against the Colts and had they not handed the ball to the backup offensive lineman against the Commanders, his personality would have been acceptable had they won those games because right. of the way that they played and
the
executed.
Jet sweep on the goal line.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that didn't make sense in terms of the job that he did. And then when he didn't do the job as well as he should have, it was easy for us to point to, well, he doesn't command the room. I think that you can have coaches who don't command the room but call a good game. He was not calling good games. So that deprived him the right to
But I'm talking about as a head coach. When I talk about an offensive guy, you know, Mark Trestman, by all accounts, one of the great interviewers.
Well, I guess that's kind of my point, though. You don't have to – if you have a Ben Johnson who is going to be the flavor of the month, do we really know how much he commands the room?
That's a great question.
I don't know.
And not only that, I don't know that I trust the people hiring him to find that out.
I know. That goes
– I think you and I should be brought in as consultants, and we'll let him know.
We're available. We're available.
At the right price.
I think another guy that fits a category or your description, a guy who came to before his head coaching opportunity came, he was known as a dynamic, offensive-minded, schematic genius, Matt Nagy.
Yeah.
And for a year, we're like, oh, great hire. Great hire. And then we learned that he wasn't the greatest head coach.
Right.
So it can be very, very tricky.
I wonder if he's in the hiring cycle this time around. There's talk about that.
I think that he should be.
Yeah.
He had to have learned from
his first
experience.
He's definitely going to get another chance.
He had two playoff appearances in 4 years.
I hope it's not here.
It won't be here.
Okay.
I don't see why not.
Yeah. Well, because Poles is from there. That's why I ask.
I think when you look at the whys, I think you have to say, why did he fail? And then when you say, why did he fail, you don't hire him again here. But that doesn't mean the Jets won't hire him.
All right, we've got to get to Jake Butt. We got to talk some college football. We'll do that next. Mullen Hall on the Score.